Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Peter Davies, author of the thrilling adventure novel, Scatterlings of Africa. Peter was born and raised in Africa and served as a territorial soldier in Rhodesia from 1963 to 1975. He saw action and took part in captures and interrogation. This gave him insight into terrorist minds, many of which were successfully encouraged to turn and fight alongside Rhodesia's soldiers against their former comrades. Davies wrote his novel, Scatterlings of Africa, using his own recollections of how the war was fought and how it affected Rhodesia and its people. We are so delighted to have Peter at Inside Scoop Live today, and here he is. Welcome, Peter.
Juanita, thank you, and thank you for inviting me. Nice to talk to you.
Great. Well, we are so excited to talk to you about your new novel that takes place in 1960s and 70s Rhodesia, and I'd love for you to first off paint a picture for listeners about what was happening politically in the region at this time.
Sure, Juanita. Well, as you know, after almost 15 years of war, Rhodesia fell under the grip of a Marxist dictator, Mugabe, who changed the country's name to Zimbabwe in 1980. But Scatterlings of Africa takes you back to December 1972 in Rhodesia's Zambezi Valley. Now, at that time, the valley was full of animals that were wild and free. It was known as a protected hunting area, not one of the relatively tame game reserves that people see today. And I had many encounters with lions, elephants, buffalo, and other big game, in addition to all the usual smaller stuff like warthogs, antelope, and so on, in this beautiful but wild part of the valley. And scorpions, tsetse fly, and other nasty insects abounded, and there was abundant bird life. But sadly, in the 1970s, when this book is set, a civil war was getting underway, and the Zambezi Valley, which was Rhodesia's northeastern border with Zambia and Mozambique, more or less in south-central Africa, was the route that insurgents used to gain access into the more populated areas of Rhodesia, up on the high veld. A few years earlier, in 1965, Rhodesia's government had declared independence from the United Kingdom. Radical African politicians were not satisfied with the slow progress being made by the mainly white Rhodesian government towards universal franchise. And their demand was for one man, one vote. Well, Rhodesians had watched this happen in all the other former colonies of Africa and saw that once that happened, future elections, if they took place at all, were rigged in favor of the incumbent government. When they discovered that they were worse off than they had been under colonial rule, the African electorates found themselves unable to change their governments. It turned out to be a case of one man, one vote, once. And as is today, mass murder, corruption, and economic disaster became the norm for independent Africa. But back in Rhodesia, the frustrated radical politicians soon became exiles and set up external military wings, a bit like radical Muslims and Al-Qaeda today. These Rhodesian terrorist organizations were funded by the West, yet trained and armed by the Soviet Union and Communist China. And like modern fanatics of Islam around the world today, terrorist insurgents set about trying to indoctrinate the peaceful black peasant populations of Rhodesia. Those who did not join the cause were intimidated, tortured, and sometimes killed. And that's why I, along with many others, was a civilian soldier and hunting terrorists in the Zambezi Valley during the 1960s and 70s. My book is a novel, and all the characters are fictional, but the events are based on what I saw and experienced in those years of war, Juanita.
That must have been an incredible, incredible time for you. Would you let's see, your early memories as a child, because you were born in Rhodesia, can you tell us about some of your early memories before you got older and became a civilian soldier?
Yes, yeah, sure, Juanita. When I was a child in the 1940s and 50s, my family lived in the bush, many miles from the nearest town, and I had only black friends. I spoke the local African language called Sindebele, as fluently as I spoke English, and possibly better. But we moved to areas where other languages were spoken, and I was sent away to attend school. So, I've since forgotten all but the most basic greetings in Ndebele, unfortunately. It was an exciting childhood. I clearly remember my mother's anguish when a small herd of elephants came through one night and wreaked havoc with her flower beds. That was an unusual event, but I often lay awake, terrified by the distinctive grating snarl of a leopard outside my open bedroom window as he prowled close by, looking for a tasty dog or cat, or maybe even me, as a snack. And the row when he broke into the chicken run was horrendous. It was too hot to keep the windows closed. Snakes abounded, everything from the huge, deadly black mambas, notorious for their aggressive nature, right down to the smallest adders that were almost as deadly. I remember seeing a cobra once, and it looked all of 12 feet long to me, but my father scoffed at that and said it was only about 8 feet. I lived and worked a regular civilian life in many parts of Rhodesia and Northern Rhodesia, as it was called in those days. That's now called Zambia. So really, that's a bit of my background, Juanita.
That's amazing. That must have just been incredible to grow up in an environment like that before the unrest.
It was pretty scary at the time, but by gosh, I wouldn't change it for anything now.
I'm sure you wouldn't. Okay, well let's talk about your novel a little bit, Scatterlings of Africa. It's a very interesting title. Can you give us an idea of what happens in this book?
Sure. Well, it's set, as I said earlier, in December 1972, when the war was actually beginning to hot up. It had been going for a while by then, but it was really getting much more active by then.
Mm-hmm.
Civilian soldiers in the book are increasingly being called upon to leave their families and their careers to fight terrorists in the bush. Now, unlike most of his compatriots, my main protagonist, Lieutenant Ron Cartwright, prefers his life as a soldier. But things are changing back home. His wife, Angela, who's desperately unhappy about her husband's obsession with the war, feels neglected. She becomes involved in an illicit romance with their long-lost cousin, Mark. Cartwright himself is suspicious, and trouble brews. And he's a hard-bitten, tough soldier by choice, and not a man to cross. It ends pretty dramatically, with all four of the main characters becoming involved.
Wow, sounds very intriguing. Is this your first book, Peter?
It is, yes. Let's put it this way. It's my first novel. I have written a non-fiction before for business, but Scatterlings of Africa was my very first novel, yes.
Okay, and you backdrop this with the experience you had yourself in Rhodesia and what you saw. But what actually inspired you to write this story, this novel, at this time with these characters?
Well, that's a good question, Juanita. Mostly my love for the Africa that was inspired me to write this book. And, of course, its people, especially the black Africans, who, unlike most of us white Africans, had nowhere else to go when the bad guys took over in 1980. The decent, often kind and gentle Rhodesian Africans were the ones who suffered most during the war itself, and they're suffering even more today.
Mm. Yes, that is very true. How did your own experience influence the story and the characters?
Well, the military parts are very much based on what I experienced myself during the war. There's one hard-to-believe scene in the book involving an elephant during that story, but I served alongside a man that this actually happened to. All I did was take a number of incidents, many of which happened to me personally, and wove them into the Scuttlings of Africa story. I think I'd better make it clear that the romantic part did not happen to me.
Okay.
But I knew people whose marriages came under serious strain because of the war, and I knew about wives who had affairs while their husbands were away fighting.
Mm.
It happens more than usual during wars, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, and especially in this particular situation. And that kind of leads me into the next question, which I find very interesting in your writing, that you really delve into the emotional nature of your characters and the journey that they're on in this unrest and in this situation. Would you talk a little bit about your decision to explore relationships and personal motivation in Scatterlings?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that question, Juanita. I wanted Scatterlings of Africa to appeal to both men and women readers. I also wanted it to be a story about people and how they're affected by war, and not just a book about war. So I worked hard at taking my readers deep into each main character's viewpoint, to become one with each character, and to understand what he or she was feeling and why they were acting the way they did. Now, readers will be able to understand what motivates the terrorist, Godziwa, for example, why he's fighting for his cause, his country, the Zimbabwe that belonged to his ancestors, and also why Lieutenant Cartwright is equally determined to fight for his country, the Rhodesia, where his settler grandparents and parents carved out a living for themselves from the barren bush. Gosh, that sounds a bit like the American West, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It really does.
I wanted my readers to be able to feel as if they were they're living in Rhodesia in the 1970s and experiencing some of what people felt during that earlier war against terror.
Wow. It sounds very raw, and I really would like you to talk a little bit about your decision to really expose the reality of the violence and turmoil that was going on in Africa at that time, and how you pin it up against the love and romance aspect. I that's quite a statement. It really is an interesting juxtaposition, and I'd love for you to elaborate on that.
Thanks, Juanita. I think that's a darn good question, because you really have hit the nail on the head there. I've tried to take the tragedy of Rhodesia and make it into a readable novel that will entertain as well as educate. And after all, we who lived through it had good times as well as bad, mostly good times until near the end. Of course, love happens during terrible times. I think love is even more intense. People's inhibitions become less constraining in those times. So it went on.
Absolutely. So, Peter, who are the Scatterlings of Africa?
Right, that's another good question. During the early 1980s, there was an artist listed as Jaluka, J-U-L-U-K-A,
uh-huh,
who released this distinctly Africa-sounding song. I think it's the same person who is today known as Johnny Clegg. The words go something like this. They are the Scatterlings of Africa, each uprooted one, scatterlings and fugitives. Hooded eyes and weary brows seek refuge in the night. It's a great song, and it's really about how Africa is the cradle of mankind, how we all, you and me, are scatterlings of Africa. But when my wife and I eventually left Africa in the late 1980s, we felt like scatterlings. We'd lost our homeland, and I still miss it. So when I was looking for a title for the book that I'd written, I decided to use Scatterlings of Africa. Now, if Johnny Clegg's lyrics and the current anthropologists are to be believed, the whole of humankind are scatterlings of Africa. But I believe that we exiled former Africans, both black and white, are the modern-day scatterlings of Africa. And those who read my book will see how this fits.
That's an incredible story. I'm actually familiar with Johnny Clegg, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to some of his songs and see if I can't find that reference in there.
Please do. It's one of his most famous songs and probably one of his earliest ones, but it's great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you said that you left Africa in the 1980s. Do you ever go back to Africa?
Oh, yes. You know, there's an old saying, Juanita, that it goes like this. You can take the man out of Africa, but you can't take Africa out of the man. Africa's in my blood. It's in my very bones. So, yes, I do visit from time to time. It's such a beautiful place. I get depressed with the dirt and the poverty now, though. It was never like that when I lived there. But the game reserves are still wonderful. I loved going on safari in the Okavango Delta in Botswana a few years ago, and I'd recommend that to anyone, even today. And South Africa itself is a huge country that still has much of its infrastructure intact, and the scenery there is wonderful. And if you can get there safely, on the border between Zimbabwe and Zambia is the mighty Victoria Falls, one of the original seven natural wonders of the world. Another great sight.
Africa really is a diverse continent with so much going on, and we're hearing more and more in the news or just over the internet about Africa these days, and I think that the civil unrest that is still there is just really coming to a head, and globally we're understanding it a little better. What are your thoughts on Africa today and what's happening, in comparison to what you experienced during the Civil War?
Gosh, Juanita, well, mostly I just feel despair and anger about what's happening there. Mm. It's not just uncivil unrest either. There's the terrible situation in Darfur, for example, which is close to being genocide. Yet another genocide in Africa. I think that thanks to liberal Western media and politicians, millions of innocent black people have died and are still dying, some due to war, others from famine and disease. None of this happened on any scale during colonial times. In 1970s Rhodesia, life expectancy was the highest in Africa, well over 60 years. Now, it's down to 37 years for men and only 34 years for women there. And those figures come from the World Health Organization statistics on Zimbabwe. They're not something I've made up. No wonder there's civil unrest. The mainly white liberals and socialist agitators who called for and financed freedom for Africa, many of whom had never actually lived there, mostly now live safe, comfortable lives in Britain, the US, and other civilized countries. Now, I'm not suggesting we should go back to having colonies. That's not possible in Africa anyway. Islamic fundamentalists are taking over Africa north of the equator and communist China to the south. Africa's vast mineral resources are being exploited today more ruthlessly than was ever the case under colonial rule, and the Muslim religion is being imposed on black African Christians and other so-called non-believers more ruthlessly than missionaries of old ever preached Christianity. But democracy, as we know it, does not always work in all parts of the world, Juanita. I even wonder if it's the right thing for Iraq or Afghanistan sometimes.
Yeah, I think that is really starting to become a topic of conversation out there, because it doesn't seem to be working, and maybe there is an alternative. I think that is very true about Africa. Do you think with the genocide that you're talking about, I mean, Darfur is the biggie, but I know that, there is equal genocide going on in the Congo and other areas. Do you think that it's getting better, or is it getting worse? Where are we at right now in Africa?
Well, Juanita, I don't live in Africa anymore, but I do follow it closely. on the internet, in the news, and I know people who live out there, and I honestly do not think it's getting any better. If anything, I'm afraid it's getting worse.
Mm. Well,
that's terrible for the, you know, that so many people are suffering so badly. It really burns me up. That does.
Yes. Yeah. It is incredibly unfortunate. I just hope with more media taking the stories of Africa, especially the liberal media, as you had mentioned earlier, hopefully it will bring more awareness and change will happen in a positive way.
Well, I must say that the media is taking more notice of what's happening in Africa, and in this sense, it is a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. Now, getting back to your book, there is a description that I just love, and I'm going to read it here. It says, a compelling high-octane novel of racial, tribal, and ideological conflict that will almost certainly draw criticism from the politically correct brigade. That's a great quote, and I just want you to talk a little bit about the politically incorrectness of your novel and what readers can expect in that regard.
Sure. I mean, yes, I think it is a fair comment about the book. So you're right. I was aware that I'd fall foul of the PC Brigade as I wrote the book. I told the story from the viewpoint of the people who were there and lived through it. People who have never been at the sharp end always seem to set the agenda for so-called political correctness. With the benefit of hindsight, some things could have been done better in Rhodesia. But that is the case with almost any endeavor. Could the Romans have ruled the world better and prevented the downfall of civilization that plunged Europe into the medieval dark ages if they'd done things differently? Maybe Pearl Harbor wouldn't have happened if the Americans had been more alert in December 1941. I just don't happen to go along with current thinking on political correctness. One day, I think we're going to all come to regret much of what has been and is being done under the guise of political correctness. But Scatterings of Africa reflects what I saw and believed when I lived through those times. So I actually make no apology, and that's why I wrote what I saw as being the truth.
Well, I think that that's great, and I believe that your book is going to bring an incredible amount of awareness to readers through a really enjoyable action-adventure type of novel in that genre. Peter, did you find it difficult writing this book, having to bring up old memories?
Juanita, yes, I did dig deep, and I've written this book from my heart. It was difficult and sometimes painful, but at the same time it was immensely rewarding. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
That's fantastic. Are you planning on writing any other books? Do you have anything else in the works at this point?
Yes, Juanita. I'm working on a new novel right now, which I hope will take less time than Scatterings of Africa did because of what I've learned. The research takes a lot of time, too, though. Even though you know your subject well, you tend to forget, or at least I do anyway, forget details after more than 30 years. And really, I want my novels to be authentic so that veterans will be able to say, yes, that's how it was. This author knows what it was like. So I don't anticipate finishing my second novel for another 12 months or so.
Well, it must be an enjoyable process writing. Are we looking at another book based in Africa?
Oh, yes, definitely. It will be based in Africa. That's the continent that I know and love, and I thoroughly enjoy writing about it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we're certainly looking forward to that one also. How can listeners and readers find out more about you and your books? Do you have a website?
I do, Juanita. It's peterdaviesbooks, that's all one word, .com, peterdaviesbooks.com. But if you can't remember that, just key in the words Africa, Peter, and Davies into any of the main search engines, and that'll come up near the top of the page, if not at the top itself. In that website, there's a section that allows visitors to read the first few pages of the book. I keep it up to date with the latest reviews, and there are links to Amazon from there. There are also a few pictures from my last visit to Botswana and the unique Okavango Delta. That's a wildlife-filled water paradise in the middle of a desert deep in southern Africa.
Sounds beautiful. Now, where exactly, what location is Rhodesia in Africa?
Juanita, it's south of the equator.
Okay.
It is a completely landlocked country and bounded by the top of South Africa itself, which everybody knows about with Mandela.
Yes.
On the eastern border is Mozambique, which I think is actually improving. That's getting much better. And then there's on the north, there is a country called Zambia, which hopefully is also showing some signs of improving. And then on the west, there are two countries, Botswana, which is where the Okavango is, and that's a lovely country, and I commend that to anyone.
Mm.
And Angola, which is on the western Atlantic coast of Africa.
Okay, all right. Sounds incredible. I know that people listening and reading your book are going to want to be booking their plane flight to Africa very soon. Sounds incredible,
I hope,
Peter.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our time...
Just make sure they go to the safe parts of Africa.
Absolutely. I guess you would have to do quite a bit of research before going over there to find out where you needed to stay away from. Do tourists typically go on tours when they're there, or what would you suggest?
Well, I would honestly suggest going on specially arranged tours, you know. It is possible for those of us who know the countries to go free and without being involved in a tour. But I honestly would recommend anybody who's never been to Africa to take a properly organized tour and make sure that they're kept safe.
That's great. The biggest decision would probably be what area would you want to see in Africa? I mean, the continent is so big.
It's a vast continent. The parts that I know, which are really South Africa, Mozambique, obviously Rhodesia, Zambia, and Botswana, I would recommend South Africa any time, and I would also recommend Botswana for a short visit. Botswana doesn't have any big cities or whatever, and it's a vast country with long distances to travel. So is South Africa. South Africa's full of wonderful scenery, beautiful coastline. Cape Town is one of my favorite cities of the world, and it has big game reserves there too. So if you're visiting South Africa, you can go across the border into Botswana, which is an equally lovely country, but there's not a heck of a lot to see there compared with South Africa, other than this wonderful Okavango Delta.
Sounds incredible, Peter. Well, our time is coming to an end, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share any final thoughts you would like to with your listeners about your novel, about Africa, or about yourself.
Well, Juanita, thank you for that. I'd just like to say that I wrote Scatterlings of Africa to entertain people who like a good action-filled adventure story, and I'm grateful that people who have read it and reviewed it seem to be saying that I've achieved that. But most importantly, I'd like to take this opportunity to say thanks to Oliveira of your organization for her excellent and perceptive review of my book on your site, and also to thank you, Juanita, for undertaking this interview with me. I found your questions great and profound, and I've enjoyed answering them. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Peter. We have absolutely enjoyed talking with you today. And it's just been a pleasure hearing your thoughts, and we wish you much success with Scatterlings of Africa.
Thank you, Juanita. Best wishes.
All right, and you too. So, listeners, you can purchase Scatterlings of Africa through local and online booksellers. And as well, for more on Peter Davis and Scatterlings, go to readerviews.com, where you can find posted a recent book review and online interview. Once again, Peter's website is www.peterdaviesbooks.com. And as he mentioned, he's got additional information about himself, his books, and Africa.